Blog Talk Radio.
The place where we get it on. Today we have an interesting program. This is an interesting day, the 276th day of 2016. Leaves us 90 days to celebrate the rest of this year. 90 days before we plunge ourselves into a new year. Amazing. This is a year that has 366 days of the year. So today we're going to begin by talking about the purpose of masonry. We'll get around to that. And we want to flirt with the idea of the goals and objectives of the order. Never hurts to challenge an assumption, I always say. We want to have a sense begin to have a sense of where we're going with all of this, but we'll get into that. Have some quotes from Alexander Pope. The focus here on Masonic effects lately has been really on the period where the thinking and the development of where the ideas of masonry were coming to the forefront. So again, we're going to talk a little bit about the Baroque era, the Rococo, military history. In terms of its influence, not as necessarily its dominance, but its influence. You know, some great Canadian jazz music here. Celebrate this. So sit back and we'll get on with the show. Brother Louis Armstrong, not that masonry produced that talent, come on, but it is kind of interesting that Louis Armstrong was cranking them out that young. He was born in 1901, so by that time he was 20. When you heard that horn in that introduction, he's 23 years old. And he was nicknamed the Satchmo, one of the most influential figures in jazz. And he, can you imagine a career that spanned five decades, well into the 60s? So he became really, was going into prominence in the 20s, as what they were calling then an inventive trumpet or cornet player. That's all those riffs that he was doing. That hadn't been done up in the time. Up until that time, and he really moved that forward. The history of the United States is firmly rooted in the history of slavery, and this man suffered tremendously as a result of discrimination. He rarely publicly politicized his race. Even though there were quite a few African Americans that were urging him to do so, but there was also a time when it's very sadly in that people were expected to know their place, not because of anything else except the arrogance of and bigotry of some, a privileged group, an in-group, and a lack of support. This is a time of the Ku Klux Klan and lynchings. So that he didn't step forward politically. He died in 1971. But he didn't really know when his birthday was until it was August 4th, 1901. And that was discovered by a researcher, believe it or not, a guy named Tad Jones. He was looking through baptismal records. So for a fellow from a poor family in New Orleans, and very poor, and if some of you have lived in families where there was a great deal of need, you'll understand his father abandoned the family when he was a little baby. And his mother left Louis a few years later and his younger sister to the care of his grandmother. And that, again, at the time was not too unusual. Anyway, when you hear those tunes, you hear the tunes, that's West End Blues by James Oliver's band. And Louis was playing his little heart out. But today, I want to ask you I want to talk to you about Masonry, the purpose. What would bring, and think about what would allow us, and then we don't have to claim any great significance. The separations between Prince Hall and Masonry had not been reconciled for quite some time, and that isn't something that we can handle bureaucratically. We can't make our usual bureaucratic excuses. They don't hold up, and not in the kind of penetrating gaze of 2016. It just doesn't work anymore. The efforts to sidestep responsibility for the appearance really should underline for us a little adage helpful to keep in mind. Intention does not equal perception. It doesn't. So the influences, there are a great many influences, but I want to get into the commentary up front here today and then talk about the influences on this. In the life of every, this is Masonry, the purpose, in the life of every organization, there is a time to stand back, to consider the purpose intended and whether it has achieved. Masonry did not start out as a tide rushing into every nook and cranny of society. What it became was a process. When we began writing down things about Masonry, when we gave up the oral tradition, that's when the questions began. Is that all there is? Well, history has taught us that there was quite a bit of misinformation generated when we were beginning to write down things Masonic. In fact, you remember there was more of an element of larceny that's not with us today. There were charlatans that were going around to different communities and connecting with Masons to sell them these new secret degrees that only they knew. Of course, we find through time that these were made up, and that these were con men who were persuading relatively unsophisticated men to turn over their hard-earned money in exchange for the new secret degree, the new secret ritual. So you can see how and why some of the vestiges of why our grand lodges are as firm, stable as they are today. It's out of necessity. They didn't form this way because they wanted to, They wanted authority and they wanted to reframe a relationship between a membership. No, they were doing it in order to protect us. Our Grand Lodge was protecting us because we had to weed out these charlatans. So how do you do that? You start to standardize in a way. But that wasn't perhaps the first thought. It was really protection. How do you stop all these nefarious people from ripping off our brethren? Well, then you begin to establish a hierarchy of a Masonic authority. So if things are sanctioned by our Grand Lodge, we know that it's gone through a rigorous examination. And after that, we can rely on the consistency of that point of view or the regulation. We even hear some older members complaining about the the rate of change. Why do we have to have the Constitution changed, or why are we tweaking with the ritual? Well, it's always been that way, gentlemen. It's never been cast in stone. If you're looking for that stuff, you really have to go back to a time before the written word. You're really spinning that out. You can wrinkle your nose, but it just reveals that you haven't done a whole lot of study. So be quiet. We'll be polite about you, but the order didn't come in as cut and dried. It came in as a process. Organizing around a process has been the crowning achievement of Masonry, I say. That, and being forged out of necessity, if it is possible to claim that necessity of Masonry came easily to the mind, the platform of Masonry was intellect. It had different words, but essentially it was intellect. One had to be a thinker in order to understand the significance of what was being proposed. A fool wouldn't pick up the significance of character development. What's character development? That's like throwing our money into the Hadron Collider. It makes no sense. There's no profit. There's no, what, does it build anything? Well, that's, of course, I look out the window. It's a nice day. This climate change, that's just a ruse. That was just manufactured by scientists. Scary, eh? Scary. One had to be a thinker in order to understand, not to be part of the order. But even the simplest, most inarticulate man can experience connections of ideas and can realize that there is more to existence than what the eye perceives. There is meaning behind things. What does it mean when a child runs up and gives you a hug? What does it mean? Well, for some, the emotional mechanics of the world, it is nothing more than the child running forward and wrapping arms around you. That's it. Those folks struggle through life. They struggle because they don't pick up the intended flow. This is an intended, they don't pick up the nuance of affection and what that means symbolically in terms of ranking us culturally and socially with one another. How do we make those decisions about the importance and the significance and emotional connections and commitment of somebody that's an intimate partner, close to us, a trusted partner, and a casual acquaintance, a friendly person in the marketplace, or a complete stranger? The platform was intellect. The need to be contemplative was quickly overcome by the appeal of being associated with thoughtful discussion. Think of the group. You and I are back in the 18th century, 17th century, when these ideas are being tossed around. Now, why in the world would that be? Why? What was the uniqueness of it? I'll just give you a little bit, you know, what I think may have fueled a bit of this. 18th century was just a calamitous period of conflict. Absolutely. It's been involved in great, Britain was involved in great armed conflicts since the Union in 1707. Just a mess. So just a quick little skirt through 100 years. Eh? The War of Spanish Succession, that was 11 years now. And then England and Scotland and later Great Britain, Holy Roman Empire, Portugal, the Dutch Republic. Queen Anne's War, that was those 11 years. The Jacobite rebellions, that was in 1715 to 1716. And then again in 1719 and then 1745, 46. And then it led into civil war, didn't it? The civil war went on between 1642 and 1651. And it was a conflict about the parliamentarians and the royalists, the roundhead parliamentarians and the royalists, the cavaliers. And principally it was over the manner of England's government. It was about I won't say the vehicle, it's bureaucracy. But it saw fighting between the supporters of King Charles, and the king was beheaded. And then what became of that? Cromwell came up. But the people were, what would you say today? A bit disoriented, culturally disoriented, because it had only, that's a nation that had only existed under the primacy of a monarch. And when you kill with the execution of Charles, then the overall outcome of the war was threefold. Charles II, his son, came in. He wasn't quite as silly as... These are men that really had dug themselves into some really difficult situations. They still had that sense of arrogance, not awareness, arrogance of the role. One thought, you know, this is divine authority, and he wasn't answerable. Well, we saw what happened with that. And could that have been avoided? Well, today, in hindsight, yeah. But if you had been brought up with that belief of people whispering in your ear that you're not answerable to the common man, that you are somehow superior in thought, word, and deed, by virtue of your birth, then you wouldn't perhaps not know how to bend a knee. So that was just a small, but that was the Civil War. Now, we went on to the war of what's called the Quadruple Alliance between Great Britain and France and Austria and the Dutch. And that was against Italy and Spain. The War of Jenkins' Ear, War of Austrian Succession, 7 Years' War, French and Indian Wars, Anglo-Cherokee War, Britain and the Cherokee Nation. Ignoble credit there. Pontiac's Rebellion in the Americas. First Anglo-Mysore War. Britain and the Kingdom of Mysore, and the American Revolution, 1775 to 1783, between Britain and the United States, France, Netherlands, and Spain. And then the Anglo-Maratha, the Anglo-Dutch, it goes on. The Australian Frontier Wars, 1788 to the 1930s, this is between Britain and the Australian Aborigines. These are things we want to forget because we blush when we take and we get resentful. This is not me. Why am I being blamed? It's about responsibility inherited. Mm-hmm. French Revolutionary Wars, 1793 to 1802, the First War of Coalition, and then for people like me, we're a little bit perplexed about the Battle of Culloden in 1746. This last land battle in Great Britain. And my gene pool did a little bit to annoy the English. I have to admit, never bended, never yielded. If that's something that we can claim with, yes, wisdom at its finest, fierce, proud. Anyway, we can take some comfort from the writing. It's an example of what was going on at the time. I'll talk to you a little bit about that. Here, we know that this seems to have been influenced by something called the Renaissance. And that's simply, again, masonry being a process. The Renaissance is a period from the 14th to the 17th century where it was thought to be, I love this idea, a cultural bridge between the Middle Ages and modern history. And it really, where it started was in Italy in the late medieval period. And the basis of it was its own, it invented as something known as humanism. And that that came about because of a rediscovery of classical Greek philosophy. Man is the measure of all things. This new kind of thinking showed up in art and architecture and politics and science and literature. And we still have examples of that today, thank goodness. It began in Florence, and that's 14th century. So we have these theories and ideas, and and it gives us an explanation for the changes, the relatively rapid changes that were taking place in the time, particularly that we can trace in art. How did we go from something relatively primitive to something incredibly sophisticated? Where sculptors are working in marble, and all of a sudden life is coming out. It's not necessarily the story, but it's real, the embodiment of real. This came about as it affected European intellectual life in the early modern period. And that's going back to the 1700s. Anyway, let's just tuck that in the back of our mind. An idea where there was an acceleration of examination, where the questions, everything was in play, and questions were being asked. Not without significant peril. The powers that be, power does not give up power. It has to be taken. So how you take that? Well, we know, I think anybody that has been a student of history will understand that a might does never conquer, never has, it just postpones, and it seems to escalate. And now what we're learning, the lessons in the Levant particularly, is that if we don't like a particular leader, we have to think before we remove him, we have to think about what's going to happen to the people left behind. Well, we have examples from history that are brought forward into the contemporary frame. The most recent that comes to mind is Gaddafi. Gaddafi was holding control over warring factions, people with hundreds of years of history of battle. And when he was removed, there was nothing put in place to control the warlords. And so the old battles, the old scores were being settled. And we refer to that type of process as radicalization. You take a bigger gun, you attack, and it's never that people are going to surrender. You have to enter into madness in order to achieve that. And is that the way you want to be known through history? You have to not only have the capability of wiping out hundreds of thousands of people, but you have to have the willingness to live with the disgrace that will follow you through history, as it is being played out from the 40s and through to today, over 100 years later. Well, we have Alexander Pope to thank for giving us some ideas and to put this into context. Pope, 18th century English poet, and he read his poetry. I always think, where did they get the notion that he was satirical? But just like our ritual has to be brought into use with modern language, language is always changing. So he said some really interesting things. To err is human. to forgive divine. Masons, you know this one. You know this. You know it, and you know where you've heard this. Blessed is he who expects nothing, for he shall never be disappointed. Yeah. I love this because I'm one of these people now. Some old men continually praise the time of their youth. In fact, you would almost think there were no fools in their days. Unluckily, they themselves are left as an example. Praise the time of their youth. It's like giving up, sitting around waiting to die and just giving up on living in the moment, enjoying, drinking more deeply from the pool of knowledge. He says, blessed is the man who expects nothing. Change your expectations. And what do we use to fuel most of our conflict? Anger or fear? To be angry is to revenge the faults of others on ourselves. An incredibly insightful mind. When we take on the shortcomings of other people, it triggers anger. So anger was a poster for us revenging somebody else's shortcoming. He's saying, the hell with it. Somebody's got a shortcoming, the hell with it. That doesn't impact on you. Walk away from it. That's their meager life. A little learning, he says, is a deep, dangerous thing. Drink deep or taste not the Purian spring. Purian. Remember, you check that one out. It's an interesting reference. I won't give it to you here. A little learning is a dangerous thing. Apply this. You know, we're here to talk about masonry. So apply these things to masonry. Now, what has that got to do with the development of Freemasonry? But first, here's a little Scott Hamilton quartet with a tune most of you will recognize, Mack the Knife. Be right back. Thank you. There we go. There we go. That's Scott Hamill. We were forged out of the period of the Baroque. This is a time when cultures began to change. Think of us like this. If we're looking at the goals and objectives of the order, I believe they run something like scholarship, inclusion, and culture. Freemasonry, I think, didn't know it at the time. But when we're looking at the universals, what is the nature of men? Then what we're talking about isn't military control or philosophical control. What we're talking about is the nature of the individual. So we have different versions of that you and I can study now and determine for ourselves the accuracy of the thinking. Right now, the work of Karl Marx is being recycled because it was incredibly well thought out. A Jewish fellow working in Britain came up with these remarkable ideas. The application was a gong show, the way it was distorted. These are folks that took a little bit of knowledge and played with it to serve their own goals, their own designs. So the Baroque is the time when there was a period of style. And it wasn't like it just was an imposition. It was the idea, the impression. And this was really seen to be a reaction to the Protestant Reformation. You know that severity? Whenever we see that, whenever we see something being brought in with an authority, telling people and being severe, it fails. It fails. And this is when the art was began communicating religious themes with an emotional involvement. The aristocracy, the rich and famous side, as a way of impressing visitors and expressing triumph and power and control. Yeah, okay. So they built some remarkable palaces with very articulate entrances, and it was there to impress. We have some people that are consuming a lot of the media today that are there to impress. It's really as simple as the Portuguese word barroco, and it refers to rough or imperfect pearl. No. So when you're thinking about this period, it was a time where there was change. And the change was not somebody yelling, hey, there's change happening. Really? I wonder what that is. It was showing in the architecture and art of the day the things that symbolize a culture. Significant themes that are of ethics and principles. And some of that, most of it, is what is echoed in the major religions. They didn't invent this stuff or make it up. It's something that's shared, borrowed. Today, we're so clamorous about the individual taking credit. For example, we couldn't give a genius idea to another genius in order to see what that person could do with it. We could never do that. In the Baroque period, that was commonplace. The rules about borrowing were much more fluid. The notions of plagiarism hadn't occurred. In fact, throughout history, there's times when declaring, you think back, what, 15th century, 16th century, when declaring that something was your own idea would have gutted it, would have taken away the essence. To say that you were quoting some other idea gave depth to what you were trying to propose. We can, of course, you fast forward that kind of an idea, that kind of notion, and it comes to an end, inevitably. Baroque didn't just come to a quick end, it evolved. And it went into, in the late Baroque, this is the 18th century artistic movement and style. So what effect, if you just let those ideas percolate, the idea of emotion in poetry and in literature and sculpture and in painting, let it percolate in the mind's eye. And what happened? Well, the same as what happens with you and I. We evolve, we change, we assimilate new ideas, and we find new ways of meeting needs, solving problems. So the Rococo period is what we refer to as late Baroque. And there's a lightness, because it's that the lightness comes from a confidence that there are certain ideas that are okay. We don't need to argue them through anymore. You're quite all right. This is a time when the grand tour, we hear that used in our jurisdiction in a very pleasant way, refers to visits of a group, large group visiting a part of our province. Well, it's significant when you realize how big this province is. This is like bigger than some entire countries of Europe or a couple of countries put together. So our jurisdiction, it builds a tolerance, because we know that if we're in a foreign corner of the province, we may not be having the kind of contact that we would like if we were in downtown of the major urban centers. So where do you see this played out? We even have a Masonic sample. Some of you know the work of William Hogarth. You know, particularly when you're seeing those infamously legless Masons with their aprons askew, with that ridiculous smile on their face, holding one another up, and with the shakes and staggers, getting themselves home after a night of revelry. Well, Brother Hogarth was giving us photographs in his mind's eye, so that we could take a look. And what do we see? We didn't just see the pretty. We didn't just see everything dressed up. He began to show us the underbelly, what polite company would not like to admit. So the Rococo was also a time when children were being recognized not as just little adults, but as people with different developmental requirements. And this whole idea that children live free of the burden and responsibility of adult life while they're developing was an advantage, came out from this time. So travel for the sake of pleasure was happening for the first time. And it also gave created this notion of anonymity. If you went somewhere else, you weren't necessarily known. And that was liberating for a lot of people, particularly when they would head to Florence, where they could sample some things that in their own neighborhoods would not be allowed to be seriously frowned upon. Now, before we put out a withered hand and say that's hypocrisy, we want to open our eyes a little wider and realize that these were people experimenting. These were people that had a need to examine something for themselves and were stepping beyond the boundaries of their cultural convention. This is where we saw cultures beginning to blend. This said in a very profound kind of way. This had always happened. As ships sailed the seas, and major navies were developed to preserve trading ports and protect interests around the world, still going on in a way to this day. There was an exchange of culture at those ports, just as there was with some military development. Some of it was just destructive and mayhem, and others was an exchange of ideas. Particularly, we see that exhibited in China, where there was an acceptance and a curiosity about ideas. It wasn't new, different ideas weren't considered a threat. They were a novelty in a way, but also a reaction to curiosity of a very confident culture, thousands of years old. Thousands of years, certainly more older than us, and has a great deal to teach us. If we look at the Chinese culture today, we want to know for ourselves, are we looking into a window about showing our own future? Very, very interesting. But how we get to our future will be through a unique history, just as it was for China. So will the outcomes be similar? Probably not, but they give us some ideas. Now, the idea of the globalization was beginning to take place in the Rococo period, the late Baroque and the Rococo period. Now, what that meant was that people were bringing ideas home with them, that they were going away. We had the privileged group of people able to travel and explore. They could see the art. They could see what was scandalous in their neighborhood was something of, considered beautiful in other neighborhoods. Now, this today leaves us with a kind of an interesting situation. In the period that we're talking about here, the access to the arts and sciences and travel was for people of means, people that had enough money so that they could did not need to scrape and work each day in order to put a roof over their head and food in the stomachs of them and their family. These were people that were the gentry or the clergy. You consider who was part of that privileged class. The gentry or the clergy, at least, certainly were. Or very wealthy merchants were coming into the scene. And in stratified societies, they were an intrusion that was wanted, sought after, and dismissed. Oh, they've only reached rank because they are merchants. You know, it's somehow as if doing that purpose, the business of trade, was impermanent and of little importance, of less importance. Funny, today we see the gentry struggling under the weight of the responsibilities, their perceived responsibilities to maintain a way of life and grand estates that are a burden, a financial burden, and heavily pressured by an ongoing indifference and risk of becoming irrelevant in the contemporary environment. Now, the influences, the exchange began to occur. Now, let's step back and take a little bit of a deep breath here, just for a second. And we're going to talk about what would be necessary if that took place. If that exchange of information, people were traveling all over the place, and it wasn't like, oh, you know, this isn't the way it is at home, therefore I'm unhappy. This is like new tastes, new foods, new style and clothing, new ways of enjoying and relaxing, new satisfactions. None of the isolationism that we see some nations performing today. These were folks that were engaging. So going to give you a little bit of Andrea Mortis and Joan Chimero Quintet with Scott Hamill. Just listen to a little bit of this, and we'll be back. And we'll answer this, we'll start to address what would be created from this process of travel. Thank you. what's not to like? Oh, did I mention? It's another Canadian group. They were playing in Barcelona when that was recorded, November 2013. Yeah, they came from this place of travelers, of refugees, of people displaced that came here and are creating this country. Now, I'm unashamed about saying that I do believe the world needs more Canada. Thank you, Barack Obama, for saying it out loud. He picked up his Canadian idea, but he picked it up, and the world is starting to pay attention. Everywhere we go, there's harmony. Oh, we are intolerant at times, and we have our hangers-on, people that take advantage of the country. But they're of little subsequence. We have greater purpose, and we'll take care of the riffraff. Don't you worry about that. We always do, don't we? Very few people get away with the nonsense. We even have some people that step forward politically, going to tell us and guide us and order us in a certain fashion, who go through history despised. Now, it's one thing to be despised by a bunch of idiots, but when you're despised in a country like us, like this, we're pretty reasonable people. We have a wicked sense of humor. We were taught how to laugh by our Irish roots. Oh my goodness! Look at the Maritimes. Go visit Newfoundland or the Maritimes, and you'll see what I mean. We can sit back and we can laugh at ourselves. Absolutely enjoy it. To be despised by this group of people, we live in a country that's still just magnificently overwhelming, breathtaking. There is so much beauty, and yet we have people living here that seem to be whining and complaining because they're listening in selectively to the perils of the media. Media, they're there selling a product, and they're going to aim at your kneecaps every time. What sells? Sex and violence. So they're going to find that no matter what the story is. They'll use some salaciousness or some violence or aggression to sell. Well, we're not that kind of people. That's not that interesting here in this country. And this is coming into the Masonic wheelhouse, gentlemen, ladies, whoever, if you're out there. What would be needed? What would be created if all of a sudden there was this process where people began to explore, not because they were going over to that country to create some trade, but because they were going over there curious to see what was over there? A break, an exploration for pleasure, curiosity. Now that you would think would just go on and on forever? Far from it. What it created then was this sense of commonality, of a counterpoint to what was being said in the media and what the politicians were saying about particular areas and our own experience. Here in Canada, we've seen this firsthand in our experience about the Cubans, with all of the rhetoric about the perils of the Cuban people. We know that all of that suppression was because of bullying, and it was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And again, history is not going to be so kind to the people behind that, that were playing on the weakness of a lot of people, playing on hatred. So we strip away the effects of propaganda, of understanding things. Propaganda really began to take hold in the First World War, really where it was used in a sort of an organized way for the first time. And after that, merchants began to realize, and politicians began to realize, there was a value to this process. You could engineer opinion. Now, today we're a bit more, we're a bit caught up in the cynicism of all of that. That politicians will claim that you and I can have our ideas massaged and reworked so that we're in line with what they want. Well, that's created what we're doing. It's not us that have become cynical, but that's a very cynical sense of the world, a cynical sense of the people in it, particularly us. What this has done is created a need that is being fulfilled by Freemasonry. How could one advance a global culture? We're getting out there and we're beyond the borders now. Remember that John Lennon song, Imagine? Imagine what the world would be like if it didn't have borders. When we look at the globe, there's no borders. It's this, we live on an ocean planet. And yeah, we'll get into that, what we've done about that. Our lack of collective stewardship certainly underlines the need to be thinking globally. Masonry, I think, so far, is the only answer. It is a huge answer. How could we advance a global culture? The perception is that if there's any advance of a new culture, it's to remove what's already there. And of course, people are going to go tribal. They'll push back. They'll feel that because they don't understand that this is something that's being imposed. Well, we can't tell whether things are benign until we experience them for ourselves. So how to do this and avoid war, avoid pain and suffering? That's the how to do this and avoid the lessons that the history of the world has taught us. Well, especially an area that was dominated by imperialists, especially this colonialism that still lingers in the air across our country. How did we survive? Well, we didn't have massive navy and control of a standing army. We did stand up and protect our boundaries and borders at one point where our neighbors to the south had designs on and taking us into their republic. But we know where that went. And we were able to now stand up and survive without those big guns. And the question is, how did we do it? Well, we had to be darn thoughtful. There are people that we have learned how not to aggravate and give stick to the big bear and to the big dog, how to become relatively uninteresting so that we bring forward indifference. Masonry certainly knows this lesson. How many years were there petitions coming from the Hamilton area, from Masons already into this country, asking for permission for us to regulate Masonry here? And what happened to those very thoughtful petitions? They were ignored. There was indifference toward who we are and what we were doing. And we used that indifference to our advantage. We were not considered a threat. Hmm? And it would only take some very deep thinkers, very insightful people to realize the potential for the outcomes that occurred. And the imperialists, the colonialists, are not that bright. So what need does that create? A global culture. Well, how are you going to advance that? From within. How do we avoid the dominant external force? How do the push against the dominant external force? Well, you don't ever define yourself as a dominant external force. We do it from within. Not subversive, but within your conscience. There's no subversion. If you want to think the world is flat, go ahead and think the world is flat. If you want to believe that mankind was walking around with the dinosaurs, really? You can't make up your own facts. You can have your own opinions, but you can't have your own science. You can't. We have to agree on the speed of light. Even if you don't understand why that's important, we have to agree on the boiling point of water. Whether you care about that or not, we have to agree on so much, whether everybody is capable of that massive understanding. We are not all physicists, but we have granted an authority and a respect to people where they can demonstrate consistency on what they're doing. And Masonry, stand up here, gentlemen. Raise your mug of Kool-Aid high and tip it back. We have been able to do that. We have done it by introducing ideas to peoples around the world in the same way they've been introduced to us. It's why we're known as the gentle craft. We've done it gently, not with subversion in mind, but with inclusion, connection. We've done it with great sincerity and authenticity, even when it's triggered a strong reaction. Even today, there's places in the world where it's dangerous to be declared a Mason. We're not perfect. We're not a machine. We're not binary. We are organic. But the ideas are enduring. The ideas that you represent, the ideas that through you are represented in Masonry, we are constantly coached to be the epitome of that, of those ideas, to live our life with understanding, to respect others, to be forgiving, to be generous. Not out of pocket generous, but generous of spirit. And as soon as we stop doing that, we're acting un-Masonically. And that's one of the very hardest things to do. It's a very hard thing to do. Here in Canada, I listened to a few young people who's carrying on and braying about the fact that we can't declare, you know, we have some politicians saying at the border, we want people to review the Canadian values and tell us whether what their beliefs are before they come into the country are consistent with Canadian values. And these young brats were saying, well, there isn't, you know, how can you possibly? Well, you and I believe in the rule of law. We can change those laws. We may not agree with them, but we believe in the rule of law. The equality of women, the rights of children. And we share a common purpose. Your health care, we don't want your house, we don't want your bankruptcy because your wife needs heart surgery, no, or treatment for cancer, no. Live in your house. We'll collectively chip in and we'll pay for those procedures. Because it's important that helps to define your connection with this country. Who else would do that than people with beliefs and in a process of ideas? I think it would be sad if anybody out there, any Mason, ever decided that they could stop an idea. You can kill a man, but you can't kill an idea. People can be ridiculous and re-examine these ideas because they've forgotten. If we don't understand our unvarnished history, we always repeat it. So, does fascism work? Well, no. Does that mean it's never going to be surfacing again? No. Does it mean that we can lay down all of our weapons and not need to protect ourselves as we move forward? No. What it means is about accountability. And these notions of transparency that happened a long time ago in the battles for habeas corpus, when Charles was held to the judgment of the parliamentarians. No, the people like me weren't represented in that parliament. Come on. People like me weren't given a vote in those days. We were insignificant. Well, we have paid quite a price to be recognized as significant, and by golly, we are. So the answer to the question about what's created, what need is created when people start to think globally, is a process of connection emotionally and ethically. And that's where Masonry has, I don't know if it's the force, but it's a window. It's a mirror, perhaps. It's a mirror on the conscience of every person. Now, if you're being bombed in Aleppo by a dictator, you're not going to be thinking this way. Your issues and concerns are the survival of you and your family and your children. And our hearts and thoughts go out to you. Our sympathy goes out to you. And we will do whatever is necessary to hold those who are attacking you to account. I know it's not enough to stop it tonight, but it will stop. Keep your faith. Preserve your culture. And know that there are like-minded people around the world, equally vulnerable, but ready to do what's necessary to preserve good ideas. That's quite enough for today. How do you move forward and convince somebody that we're not an enemy? That's the nuanced conversation that takes place over a glass of wine and a little bit of food and or a cup of hot tea, where we begin to know each other and become familiar. Masonry is all about familiarity. And it's been an absolute pleasure having you join us again this morning, this afternoon, this evening. I hope you'll tune us in again. Pass us on to other Masons. Let them know if you think the conversation has some merit. We'll look forward to being in touch with you again. We're coming up to the Thanksgiving next week in this part of the world. And I want you, in the meantime, to think about all the things and reasons you have to be thankful. If you're prone to sitting around waiting to die, stop that. Just go with that. Ridiculous. Get out there and live every day as if it's your last. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness and listen to a little Connie Evanson, Jazz of the Jungle, Canadian Sunset. Eh? Lovely. Talk to you soon.
Once I was alone, so lonely, and then you came from out of nowhere, like the sun up from the hill. Fast, fast, speed my that sunset, from that day we never part. But who I am lucky day. You awaken and your blues will be forsaken. One lucky day, lovely love will come your way. Long as there's love in your heart to share, dear blues, don't despair. Some blue boy is longing just like you to find someone to be true to, to loving hearts he can love and stay. Well, get set, blues, that true love is coming. Your troubled heart soon will be humming. By you day, ba-da-ba-dum, ba-da-ba-da-day. By you day, ba-da-ba-dum,
yeah.
If I am fancy free and love to wander, It's just what you see in my soul. There's something calling me from way out yonder. It's just the gypsy in my soul. If I am fancy free and love to wander, it's just the gypsy in my soul. There's something calling me from way out yonder. It's just the gypsy in my soul. I've got to give in to my emotions. I'm only content having my the gypsy in my soul. It's just a gypsy in my town.